Hey everybody, on today's Film and Whiskey, Brad takes a trip to St. Louis and comes back with 8 different samples for us to try from 2 distilleries. And while we drink those, we answer your listener questions. That's all ahead on today's Film and Whiskey. Hey everybody, welcome into the podcast. We are back with another special bonus episode.
Bonus episode.
We're doing something today that we've never done before, Brad. You recently took a trip to St. Louis and you came back with a bunch of whiskey because you visited some distilleries while you were down there. And we found out that we actually had 8 whiskeys to sample on the show. So the topic of our bonus episode today is literally just Bob and Brad drink 8 whiskeys. And while we drink 8 whiskeys and get, you know, at least mildly toasty, we're going to answer some listener questions. We've had a ton of questions come in on all of our social media, as well as our Discord, of things people want to hear us talk about. We've also just pulled some, you know, would you rather questions from off the internet. So, Brad, I think this is going to be a really fun day.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this. I had a spectacular time out in St. Louis. One of my best friends in the world and my brother-in-law, we got to go out, do a few tours, just had a really great time in St. Louis. I think one of the most beautiful things about whiskey is that, man, you don't have to go to Kentucky for great whiskey. And hopefully we can prove that today with what we got out of St. Louis.
Brad, can you tell us which distilleries we are sampling product from today?
Yeah, we are sampling from St. Louis Distillery, their Cardinal Sin line, and we are also sampling from Still 630, which is located right in the heart of St. Louis.
I cannot wait to get into this. I've got my tall glass of water, I've got a tall cup of coffee, and I've got 8 samples of whiskey in front of me. Brad, I'm going to let you lead the way here. Why don't we start with this Cardinal Sin? They gave us 2 samples. Which one would you like to try first?
I want to get right into what I think is their best offering, and their original whiskey offering is their Cardinal Sin Rye Whiskey. Now, I got to go down to Cardinal Sin and meet with one of the 3 owners, Bill Schroer, and Bill was just spectacular. The dude is an orthopedic surgeon, and he and some friends were drinking vodka one night, and they were like, you know what we should do? Bob, this sounds like something we would talk about. They're like, you know what we should do? We should, you know, start a distillery. So they went off and they started their own distillery. And they've actually been voted the best craft vodka distillery in America. So the primary thing they've made for a while now, I think about 10 years, is their vodka. And Bob, let me tell you what. I don't drink vodka very often, but their stuff was delicious.
Well, Brad, I am excited to get into drinking this rye. We're going to give just very, very brief tasting notes because we have so many whiskeys to get through. But as I nose this rye, this might be the most predominant leather note I've ever gotten on a whiskey. It smells like walking into, you know, a high-end dress shoes store. And I really like that.
Yeah, I think that their rye is definitely the best whiskey they have. They're slowly expanding their lineup. So if you want to keep checking out what they're putting out a new whiskey every few years. So keep checking them out. But they started with their rye. And Bob, I think that their rye is delicious. It, like you said, it's leathery, it's chewy, it's got all sorts of nice little spicy notes to it. I am just really impressed with what Bill and his team did there.
Yeah, you can tell that the grain is pretty young in this. Like, it's not significantly aged, but Brad and I have both said that we like young rye before. So I'm really digging this, Brad. It's darker. That leather note goes all the way through it. But yeah, we're off to a good start here, Brad. So what do you say we just kind of shoot the breeze a little bit? Let's ask each other a couple of these questions. We have this huge Google Doc full of questions in front of us.
Yeah, these AMAs can be so much fun. And we're so thankful that Film and Whiskey Nation threw in some of these questions. But I'm not going to lie, Bob. The first one I was a little bit confused by. What's better, Casino or Goodfellas? I know what Goodfellas is. But are they talking about Casino Royale?
No. So Martin Scorsese, the movie that he made after Goodfellas was a movie called Casino. It came out in 1995, also had Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci. It's a really good movie. So I guess I can answer this one really quickly. This is from a listener. What's better, Casino or Goodfellas? It's got to be Goodfellas for me. And I'm the only one that's seen both of these. So I feel like
you're the
official,
only human being. Ever.
Well, the only host on this show that has. And we already know how Brad feels about Goodfellas.
I think Goodfellas is a pretty good movie.
Well, this is an opportunity for a shameless plug from us too, Brad, because in just a few short weeks, we're going to be doing a bonus episode that we're going to call The Revisit. We're going to pick a movie from our past that it's time for us to go back and rewatch again. And the very first one we're going to do is going to be on Goodfellas. So Brad and I will be rewatching that movie very soon and discussing again. So yeah, stay tuned for some more back and forth on Goodfellas.
Some Goodfellas action. Yeah, I'm excited to get back into Goodfellas. It was literally the first movie I watched for the podcast. So we'll see where my taste has gone since then.
All right, Brad, so what we did with this list of questions, we had a bunch that were just called from the internet and then a bunch that came from our listeners. We threw them into a randomizer and we're going to just kind of walk through them in the order that they came out of the randomizer. And so our number two question, I have no idea what you're going to say to this, Brad. What is your favorite Olympic sport?
Man, this is a tough question. I love the Olympics. I think they are so much fun. The pageantry, the competition, there's so much beauty to what the Olympics brings to the world. And I don't know if I could say I have one favorite sport. I will say growing up watching Michael Phelps for so long has like definitely cemented swimming as being up there as one of my favorites. I think curling is just hilarious. Like I could watch curling for hours on end.
I'm trying to find the name of the one that I like.
Skeleton.
What's skeleton?
I think it's like a luge type thing, but it's like a one man.
Hold on. List of Olympic.
Bob, your favorite Olympic sport, you don't even know the name of it?
All right, so here, I can't think of what it's called, because originally I thought it was called ski jumping, but it's not ski jumping. That's where they just try to, like, go really far and they jump. It's the one where they go down the ramp on the skis, and then they come up.
The slalom?
I don't know if it is the slalom, where they go down the ramp, and then they come off, and they do, like, spins and tricks and stuff, and they still have to land at the end. That is by far my favorite, especially winter. I think that's just the coolest sport in the world.
Well, I don't think that you're allowed to claim it as your favorite sport until you know what it's called.
Yeah, but honestly, Brad, like everything we watch on the Olympics every 4 years, like there's only a couple sports that we all know. And by the end of it, we think that we're like experts in curling, but we don't even think about curling for four more years. So
no,
you gotta cut
totally
me a little
know.
Slack. It's the jumpy spinny one. That's the name of the sport.
Yeah. Why did you say so? The jumpy spinny one. I will say I did run track for 10 years of my life, all the way from middle school through college. And I love track and field, but like between having so many great track stars in the 90s and 2000s from the US to watching Usain Bolt just dominate the Olympics in a way that probably only Michael Phelps has, I love track and field, man. I can't get enough of it.
All right, we have one more question before we get into trying another whiskey, and this one comes from Bourbon and Stuff. They've been a wonderful follower of ours. They've been sending us samples of whiskey, and they ask, what is one dram, or, you know, one glass of whiskey that elicits an emotion from you? Good or bad, just a genuine reaction. Brad, what do you think?
I think that any of the white whiskeys that I've ever had elicit all sorts of anger, frustration, disgust. I think I've maybe had one white whiskey where I was like, oh, that's like okay.
Sure.
I don't know, Bob. Have you ever had
man, I don't mess around with White Dog. Like, I can't do it. It's just, there's a reason that I like to drink aged whiskeys. But when it comes to like commercially available, readily available whiskeys, it's hard for me to think of one that I had a stronger reaction to than Mellow Corn. Because it wasn't even so much that I disliked Mellow Corn. Like, I don't like it. It's that everyone else that does like it is so passionate about it that it's like, are you crazy? Like, we got a ton of pushback on our Mellow Corn review. And Brad, it's just one of those things where I'm like, am I missing a part of my tongue that everyone else has? Because I cannot taste what everyone else is supposedly tasting on this whiskey.
Yeah, I'm still right there with you, Bob. I've had Mellow Corn again since, and it's not even that it's terrible. It's just not very good.
No.
And the following that it has is remarkable. But hey, we're off to a great start here. We're already digging a grave that we had already dug for ourselves. So we're just like, we're nailing it, man.
Digging deeper. All right, Brad, the next whiskey in our lineup is this Cardinal Sin American Single Malt Whiskey. I love drinking single malts that come from America. They have a character that they just don't from Scotland. You know, you kind of get they almost taste a little bit more like a blended whiskey than they do those heavily peated Scottish single malts. This one comes in at 90 proof. Brad, have you tried this one already?
I have tried it. I was able to try all of them at the distillery. But I actually popped this open, had some a little bit earlier today. And while I think that the Cardinal Sin Envy, which is their rye whiskey, also, like, let's just get over the fact that their goal is to make seven whiskeys named after the seven deadly sins. I just think that's like
that's
coolest
cool.
marketing.
Yeah.
And like, if you look at their bottles, the actual label themselves look like the bishop's hat that he wears. Like, it's just, they're just on top of their game. They got all sorts of cool stuff. But so their pride is the American single malt. And I think that you are correct in saying it tastes like a blended whiskey. It's really, really tasty. It's got some stuff going on. It tastes just a little bit young to me.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that as they allow it to age a little bit more, hopefully they'll bump the age statement up. I think that this has a lot of potential, Bob.
I think so, too. It definitely tastes like unaged spirit. Yeah. And I was trying to say earlier that I think American single malts tend to taste more like a Johnny Walker, like a blended scotch. But this actually tastes like blended whiskey, which would be closer to like the Seagram 7 that we had. It just tastes so young that it's almost got that sort of vodka, you know, neutral grain spirit taste to it. I do think this needs a little bit more time to mature, but not a totally bad experience. Just, I was hoping for a little bit more well-roundedness on it.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, you know, these are two whiskeys out of Cardinal Sin. Bob, I'll tell you what, their vodka is really good, but they make one of the coolest spirits I have ever had that we're not trying today. We might try on the show another day. It's called Starka. And it is their vodka aged in a whiskey barrel.
Huh.
And I'll tell you what.
So it basically is like Seagram 7, but they just make it in the barrel.
Dude, it's spectacular. It's so, so good. It tastes like an extremely, extremely, the smoothest whiskey you've ever had in your life.
So what's with the name? Why is it called Starka?
So I believe the name comes from Eastern Europe. It's from like a Ukrainian or Lithuanian type area. Basically, this is the only version of this that you will find in the U.S. It's aged for 6 months in a charred Missouri white oak barrel. It's vodka, but it's whiskey, and it's just so, so good. They make it all the time over in Eastern Europe. They don't make it here in the U.S. And if you want to try some, you have to get some from St. Louis Distillery. And it's so tasty, dude. I can't wait for you to try it.
I'm excited to try it. All right, Brad, let's keep sipping on these whiskeys and get into some more of our questions here. The next one that we have on our list, Brad, I want you to name five great albums off the top of your head.
Bob, I don't know if I know the name of five albums.
Oh, my gosh. So not what you're saying is not only are you not well-versed in films, but music is also not your forte.
I would say that music is less of my forte than movies.
I do think you could name five movies now if I asked you to.
I might be able to do that.
You've come a long way.
Let me just try to name five albums. How does that sound?
All right, sure.
I think Abbey Road might be my favorite Beatles album.
Yeah,
so we'll say Abbey Road.
Yep.
I do love, Bob, you introduced me to this album. It's John Mayer, Continuum by John Mayer.
Oh, yeah.
That's such a spectacular album. Man, Bob, I don't know if I've ever listened to like a whole album just by itself outside of the Beatles and Continuum by John Mayer.
That's crazy. All right. Well, let's just say those are two of our five, and I'll just throw out three more random albums here.
No. I want you to give me your top five.
Well, actually, Abbey Road is I think the greatest album ever made. And so it's already on there. You know, Continuum was such a huge part, especially of my college age years, that I think it's definitely up there in my top five favorite albums, if not the best ever. You know, I'd probably put something by Kanye West up there. I loved Kanye's, especially his earlier stuff. Late Registration is a great album. I've been really into Paul Simon's very first debut album after Simon and Garfunkel. It's self-titled Paul Simon. That's a great album. And then number five, I have to go David Bowie, and we do a little Ziggy Stardust, the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. So there's my five.
The Spiders from Mars?
It's
what are you even talking about, Bob?
Do you know David Bowie?
I know David Bowie.
So, like, you know, every once in a while he would reinvent himself as a new character. And this album is basically like the concept is that it's about this character named Ziggy Stardust and his band, the Spiders from Mars. It's like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Like, okay. Bowie is playing a character on the album.
Cool, cool, cool. Yeah. I'll go listen to it sometime.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. All right, Brad, why don't we continue down our list here? Hit us with our next question.
What is our guilty pleasure movie and guilty pleasure alcoholic beverage?
Oh, interesting.
Bro, I'm not going to lie. One of my absolute favorite mixed drinks in the world. Like
Cosmos.
This is up there as one of the greatest things ever. Hot chocolate and bourbon.
Oh, okay. Well, so here's the thing with this question. Like, this is from our friend Bourboneering. I think it's a great question. But, you know, I don't really believe in being guilty, feeling guilty for anything you like. And that's part of what we do on this podcast is like, you know what one of my favorite comedies of all time is? Mean Girls, because Mean Girls is a freaking hilarious movie. And like, if we ever do it on the show, I will give a full passionate, you know, defense of that film. I thought
you were about to say 10 out of 10.
No. But what I'm saying is,
I will give a full 10 out of 10 to Lindsay Lohan.
I think there's a lot of movies that people would kind of like raise their eyebrow that I like, but I don't feel guilty about it. Or I would, you know, it's not something I try to hide from the world. So, like, even with alcoholic beverages, like, I will pound a White Claw. I have no shame in drinking White Claws because they're delicious. Like,
but so, would you go to a bar and order, like, a Pixie Dust bright, shockingly blue mixed drink?
No. I feel like if I go to a bar, I'm going to order something off the whiskey shelf that I can't afford in regular life. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I can't get a bottle of it, so I'll just get a glass. So yeah. For me, it's like I'm boring that way. I'll either get a whiskey or a beer.
Or a White Claw.
Or a White Claw, yeah.
You're so basic, Bob.
Thanks, Brad. On that note, though, our next question. What is your favorite beer? We really don't talk about beer much on this show, but I know that we both drink it.
There's every once in a while where I'm like, man, I can't drink another whiskey. I just need some beer. Actually, honestly, probably my favorite guilty pleasure beer is PBR. I freaking love some Pabst Blue Ribbon, man. It's like, of all of the light beers, it's flavorful, it's tasty. I love it. I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, dude. Again, like, I don't feel guilty at all saying that. PBR is really great. When we lived in Kentucky, the Applebee's in Nicholasville had PBR on tap. And, like, it's 58 times better on tap than it is out of a can too. Like yeah. I will absolutely drink some PBR. My favorite cheap beer is Coors Banquet beer, which you and I have also pounded before.
Yeah, dude.
And lately I've been getting this beer from Aldi cause that's where we shop. And it's like this amber ale. It's called Independence.
Yeah,
Harbor.
Yeah. Independence, man. It's fake Sam Adams.
They flavor it with honey. It's delicious. And it's like, I think it's like $6.99 for a six pack. So you can't beat it.
Dude, Haley and I were talking about this the other day. When does something that is off brand become on brand? Like if your children grow up eating Aldi's brand potato chips, will that be their on brand and like Lay's will be off brand?
That's a really good question. I think it should. All right. Along these lines of food related questions, our friend Aperture Flash sent us maybe the weirdest question in this whole list. And it's just this, Brad. Seasoning on popcorn. Yes or no?
Well, clearly the raw kernel that has been freshly popped is the only way to eat popcorn.
Who eats unseasoned? Even like if you air pop it, don't you put a little salt or something on it?
I am a popcorn purist, Bob. Maybe they know something up in Canada that we don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go yes. I think I'll alter the question a little bit. What's your favorite kind of seasoning?
So they make this stuff called Nature's Seasonings, which is like, it's basically just a bunch of flavored salts. It's like celery salt.
Aren't all seasonings out of nature, Bob?
I think it's made by Morton's Salt. And like, so it's like celery salt. It's got garlic and onion and black pepper in it. And it's just like all in one can. And that stuff on top of popcorn is, it's lights out, dude. Like if we have it in the cupboard, I don't put anything else on popcorn.
Huh. Yeah. So I work at a winery here in Delaware, and there's an awesome little local theater called the Strand Theater. And the owner of the theater comes into our winery pretty often, and she will bring over their movie popcorn, and she just makes it the best. She probably layers it about three separate times with butter, and then she'll throw their white cheddar salt on it. Oh my gosh, dude. This stuff is so, so good. So shout out to Tracy at the Strand Theater in Delaware.
For her buttering skills.
Oh my gosh, dude. It's spectacular. She also runs an amazing theater. So.
All right, Brad, I think it's time for us to move into the Still 630 Distillery. What do you say we try this? So first of all of these are apparently experimental runs that you got samples of. And the one I have in my hand that I just pulled down off the shelf is called the X27. This is a 17.5-month age bourbon that is 100 proof.
Yeah, so Still 630 was this super cool little spot, literally right in the heart of St. Louis. It's right south of Busch Stadium. It's right near Anheuser-Busch. Like, it is right there in the middle of St. Louis. And the owner, David Weglars, is just the coolest dude. He has self-proclaimed that he wants to be a modern whiskey baron. Like, he just loves whiskey. And his passion for whiskey has taken him to the point where, like, Bob, I kid you not, the dude has a what he calls the library of whiskey, where he just has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bottles of distilled flavors. So, like, he's got, like, lavender distilled down to a flavor and peppercorn. And it's kind of like the nosing kit that we reviewed a little while back, but an actual liquid form that you can drink and nose and figure it out. The dude is insane about whiskey, and Dave has just done some amazing stuff. But yeah, he's given us these experimental batches. Before COVID, they've been running these experiments every single month where they're just experimenting with, like, what is it like to add mesquite or lavender or all of these different things to our whiskey. And it's just him trying to find the best whiskey that he can find.
Well, Brad, without knowing a ton about this particular sample, this Experiment 27, I will say that it smells very young, and that's obvious because I said it's only 17.5 months in the barrel. But like underneath that sort of young grain smell, there's a lot of breadiness on this, almost biscuity. And I get a lot of green apple. Like, it's really bright with some great fruit notes, a little bit of stone fruit as well. And so, like, yes, it smells young, but it doesn't just smell like unaged spirit. It smells like it's got some really, really great, well-pronounced, bright fruit notes and some good bready notes as well to it. I'm going to give it a sip.
Yeah, and I think that we're gonna keep talking about that with these experimentals. David wasn't trying to go for perfect whiskey here. You know, he was trying to elucidate different aspects of the tasting palate. And so these are going to be very fascinating, very interesting. And Bob, I'm excited to hear what you think about this one.
Yeah, I actually really like this, Brad, for being as young as it is. And you can taste how young it is, too. For me, it's like it's honey and black pepper all the way. It's like spicy honey. Yeah. And I really, really like this a lot.
Yeah, this has a nice Kentucky hug that lingers.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, for me, I'm getting that honey note really strongly. And I think, man, if he aged this a little bit longer, this might be a mainstay.
Oh, yeah. This is great. All right, Brad. Well, we're off to a good start. We've got five more of these to try from Still 630. But it's time for a couple more questions. And I have one for you that I've actually never asked you before. But Brad, have you ever had an idea for a movie? Like one that you think, you know, you're just like in the shower one morning and you're like, they should make a movie about that. Like, have you ever had one that's just been like a burning, why hasn't this been made into a movie story?
Wait, they should make a movie about me being in the shower?
Well, that too.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. Hey, man, stop ruining my plans for season four.
Man, I don't know if I have ever had an idea for a movie. I won't lie. I've had a few ideas for books before.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought about writing, but I've never actually thought about like a screenplay, you know, like for film.
So I don't think I've ever had any that really like came up from within me, but like every once in a while, like when you go down a Wikipedia rabbit hole or something, there's just stories that stick out to me and I'm like, man, why haven't they made that into a movie yet? I told you a little bit ago that I've been really into this Paul Simon album, and there is another folk singer from back in the day. His name was Jackson C. Frank. He's like not very well known. I only knew him from one song that was really famous of his called Blues Run the Game, and his life was like really tragic. And like, I'm not saying it would be a super happy movie, but like I looked at a picture of him and immediately my mind was like, there's this really great young actor named Jesse Plemons. He was on Breaking Bad. He had a great supporting role in the movie Game Night a couple years ago. And I'm like, man, that kid's a great actor. And I would love to see him take on the life story of this guy, because, you know, every once in a while you just run across somebody's life story and it's like, I really think they should make this into a movie. I think it would be a great film. So, you know.
I was going to say, now that you've said it, I think that there needs to be a lot more biopics out there. Like, I don't remember the guy's name, but there was a Medal of Honor recipient from World War II that I remember reading his story. And the dude, like, stormed a German machine gun nest by himself. He killed, like, 18 men, captured about 40. And he got the Medal of Honor, very deservingly so. And I remember just reading stories like that and being like, yeah, like that could be a really cool movie.
What we're saying is we need to start crowdfunding so that you and I can just start directing movies.
Yeah, we'll get friend of the show, Patrick H. Willems, to come join us because I'm sure he would like to make a feature length film.
Absolutely.
And we'll be off to the races, man.
Sounds good, man.
But that takes us off to our next question, Bob, which I think is a great question. What is our favorite non-whiskey spirit?
Oh, interesting. You know what? Like when COVID hit, I sent my wife to the liquor store because I was like afraid to go anywhere because I'm high risk, actually. And so she was like, what should I get? And I was like, get one of every kind of spirit so that we can make ourselves like whatever drink we want. So she came home with like, you know, cheap bottles of vodka and tequila and gin and cordials. Like she brought triple sec. And I have to say, COVID has turned me into a pretty standard gin drinker. I really, really like the flavors in gin. I think it probably is from drinking so much whiskey that we're used to those like herbal notes and some of those drier barrel notes as well. I think wine drinkers might also like to drink gin. But like, you know, vodka doesn't taste like anything. Tequila, I can't drink it straight, but like a really high quality gin, I feel like I could really sip on and enjoy the flavors of.
Yeah, Bob, I think for me, tequila definitely takes the cake. Gin, I'm not going to lie, I had one bad experience with gin and I haven't drank it since.
So, Brad, will you sip on a tequila neat? Do you have like a brand that you like to sip on, or is it more just like you use it to make, you know, margaritas?
Honestly, both. I don't have any tequila that I purchase on my own. It's more of a good friend of mine, Ryan. He loves tequila, like the way that we love whiskey. And so whenever we go over to his house, he's like, hey, man, try this. Like, if we didn't have so much whiskey in the house and so much time and energy and money committed to whiskey, I would probably try to build up a little bit of a tequila collection because I think the flavor profiles are just fascinating and they can do so much. And I will say, cheap whiskey is drinkable straight. Cheap tequila not super drinkable straight.
Yeah.
But when you get into the mid-range stuff, not the expensive stuff, you know, like the $25 to $40 bottles of tequila, it's very drinkable. And even beyond that, I would say it's pretty delicious.
Brad, our next question is one that I am like really excited to walk down memory lane with you about. We had the question written into us, how did Bob and Brad meet? And you know, like we've kind of talked about the fact that we went to college together, but I don't know if I remember like the specific instance where I first met you. Do you remember that?
I was literally just thinking that. I have a specific memory of meeting two of your best friends, James and Max.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just have to assume that at some point of being friends with James and Max, that you and I met in their room at some point, because you were commuting at the time, right?
Yeah, I was a commuter for 4 of the 5 years I was at Malone.
I don't know. It's kind of like in New Girl when Nick talks about how Schmidt just showed up and he was suddenly there in his life. Like Bob was just suddenly
in
my life.
Yeah.
And my life was better off for it.
Well, Brad, let's carry this positive energy into trying the next sample from Still 630. And I'm just drawing these at random off of a shelf. This is the experiment number 9, the X9. It's cherry wood, a small batch, and it's 100 proof.
And while we're sipping on this one, Bob, do you think it's time to tell the Taco Bell story?
All right, so...
because this might be one of my favorite stories ever.
Actually, you tell it, because I don't remember like what got us to Taco Bell.
So it's our freshman year. Well, my freshman year, your sophomore year. And it was late one night, and I was like, Bob, I want Taco Bell right now. And I don't think I had a car on campus. And you, being the commuter, did. And so I was like, hey, Bob, let's go get some Taco Bell. And this was right when that terrible commercial with Charles Barkley was going on.
Wait, I got to stop you before you get into Charles Barkley rapping. Because now I remember the setup to the story. The setup to the story was you wanted to go to Taco Bell and couldn't find anybody to take you. And you kept saying, Bob, can you please take me to Taco Bell? Take me to Taco Bell. And I was like, Brad, I don't feel like spending any money. Like, I'm not hungry. And you were like, Bob, it's okay. Like, just take me to Taco Bell. And you reassured me in a way that heavily implied that you were going to buy me Taco Bell.
I never once implied.
You absolutely did. And that's the only reason I took you, because I was like, well, I'll eat a taco if he gets me something. So we get to Taco Bell. And again, Brad, you're right. Like, this Charles Barkley commercial had just come out because they had just introduced the $5 box.
Yeah,
and
this was like brand new.
It was Big Chuck on this commercial, and he was rapping the $5 box. It rocks. It rocks. And he had like 5 words that rhymed with box, and it was a terrible rap. And we all knew it, and it was really dumb. And we get up to order, and Brad's like, you know, order me this and that. And I'm like, okay.
I literally got like $2 or $3 worth of stuff. It was like a soft taco, and that was it.
And the whole time Brad has been encouraging me, dude, you got to get this $5 box. And I'm like, Brad, I don't need to get the $5 box.
But here's the thing. The final way that I convinced you, you were like, I remember this vividly. You were like, Brad, I don't need to spend $5, or I don't need a whole box worth of food. I said, but Bob, it comes in a box.
And I thought on that, and I said, you know what? It does come in a box.
It does come in a box.
I want the box. What other foods come in a box from Taco Bell?
Yeah.
So I order the $5 box, and I'm feeling really good, and we get up to the window to pay.
And we're rapping.
And Brad, they're like, all right, the first order is, you know, $3.05, and the second order is $5.07. And Brad hands them the card, and he's like, this is for the first order. And, like, very clearly, explicitly shut down any possibility of paying for my box. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, I didn't even want a box of food. And now I'm stuck paying the $5 for it. And I'm like, you know what? Fine, whatever. Like, at least I get the $5 box. All this food's going to be spilling out of this cool, rigid, square box. And they look at me and they said, oh, hey, by the way, we're out of boxes. Can we give you your $5 box in a bag? And they hand this bag out the window, and it was like clearly a too small bag. And so, Brad, like, you can attest to this. It looked like a bag filled with used diapers. It was just lumpy and sad. And at this point, I am just pissed because I didn't even get my box. And I get the bag in the car, and I look over at Brad, this guy I barely know. And you look at me, and what did you say?
The $5 bag, it sags, it sags.
And that was when I knew that I truly hate you.
Cheers, Bob.
Cheers to you, man. So this cherry wood whiskey, Brad, this smells really, really young. This smells younger than the other one did. I'm not getting a lot of good notes off of this one. Obviously, like, you're not necessarily going to get a cherry scent because it's cherry wood. But this, I mean, it really just does smell like young oak and young grain.
Yeah, it's reminding me a little bit of a White Dog. And we know how I feel about that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's just give it a sip.
All right, so it's like really, really herbal. Almost has this like smoky, peaty aftertaste to it, though. Like, I actually wish that the single malt had more of this kind of mossy, peaty flavor to it.
Holy crap, dude. This like tastes like a scotch.
It tastes just like a scotch, doesn't it?
Yeah. Huh.
A That's young actually, scotch.
Yeah.
Like definitely not well aged, but yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things getting into scotch, a lot of people I had heard say that it smells and tastes like gasoline. I think with this one, I get that. It smells a little bit gasoline-y, but the finish is really, really nice and smoky. I don't mind this. It's pretty good.
Yeah. And again, I think what we're going to say here is that if it was a little bit longer aged, it would be even better.
Yeah, it's an interesting whiskey, and I'm excited to keep going down this line. These experimental stuff, it's just fascinating. But our next question is coming from Low Class High Proof on Instagram, and they asked us, you can only watch one movie and drink one whiskey for the rest of eternity. What are they?
That's a good question. I mean, this is really asking, what's your favorite movie? You know what I mean? Like, this is a really roundabout way of saying, like, what movie is not going to annoy you for the rest of your life?
I was
going to
say, I think maybe not even favorite, because I think that some of us have a favorite movie that we only want to watch every few years.
Sure.
But, like, I think the most rewatchable, the most value that you get over the long term. Man.
Don't answer this. I want to see if I can guess yours.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a good idea.
I think you would choose... It's got to be Star Wars. I'm going to go with A New Hope as your movie.
See, that's where my brain first went. If I had to pick one of the Star Wars movies to rewatch the rest of my life, it probably would be A New Hope. Ooh, actually, I don't know. It might be Return of the Jedi. I love Return of the Jedi, man. Honestly, Bob, this is just, it's a tough question. Maybe I could go with New Hope. Two Towers would be up there.
Oh yeah, for sure.
As a replayable movie, there's part of me that wants to pick something like funny and lighthearted, because that can just go into any situation. Like there's certain times where like I don't feel like watching Two Towers or New Hope. I just want to watch something funny or lighthearted. I don't know.
I totally get that. I think for me, like I'm gonna be super predictable, but if I really had to pick one. It probably would be Casablanca. Like, I just think that it has lighthearted moments. It has moments of intrigue. There's the romance element. There's the dramatic stuff. Like, I just, how witty the script is and how well written it is. I really just don't ever get sick of watching that movie. And I think that would probably be my, like, desert island movie. When it comes to having a whiskey for all eternity, like... I don't know. You want something that's approachable. You want something you could drink every day and not get sick of. And that's hard to pick. You know, honestly, like I'd probably pick something like a Henry McKenna. I really like McKenna. I think that even though it's single barrel, like I've never had a bad batch of McKenna. And I would definitely pick McKenna over like Weller Antique. And like, well, it's honestly, not really prohibitive cost wise. So I think it would be something that like if you could get a good enough stockpile of it, like that would be my one that I would choose, I think.
Honestly, Bob, I was actually thinking of Henry McKenna as well.
Oh,
and
cool.
I think single barrel is a sneaky pick because then you're not actually getting the same whiskey for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? So by picking Henry McKenna single barrel, you're actually saying, yeah, I want a variation of Henry McKenna for the rest of my life.
All right, Brad. Well, our next question might be an even harder one. It's from our friend Aperture Flash again. He wrote in a ton of questions and they were all really good. And he wanted to know, what is the hardest movie death for you to watch?
Man, that's a good question. I think that there's different levels of emotion when it comes to movie deaths. Like, honestly, I just watched Coco the other night. And like when they put Mama Coco's picture up on the ofrenda.
Yeah.
That's just like that's like brutal, man.
Yeah.
I think, man, just speaking of Pixar, I think Up, the first 5 minutes of Up is brutal.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the hardest and yet, like, most satisfying deaths for me is when Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor Marcus Aurelius, when he passes away and he goes to see his family... Dude, I just lose it every time, man. Yeah. I love Gladiator. It might be up there as one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, that's why this is a hard question for me, Brad, because like when we're talking about something that's really hard to watch, like I have an aversion to that and I feel like my brain tunes out. I don't want to go back and watch a movie where somebody I love goes through like a really agonizing death. And I think that's like, I guess I would call it like the Walking Dead syndrome, where like everyone's favorite character gets killed in like increasingly brutal ways. And I think it's like kind of cruel when movies do stuff like that. So I guess for me, it's like, I'm in the same boat as you. The one that came to mind was Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan. I think that because like not that it's super hard to watch, but because you spend so much time wanting that character to get home to his family, and obviously he doesn't. When it comes to like the brutality of deaths, I'm going to give a spoiler alert for this movie I'm going to bring up. But there's a movie that came out a few years ago called End of Watch with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena, where they play police officers. And at the end of the movie, I'm not going to say who it was, but one of them gets brutally murdered. And it is like super abrupt. That was really hard to watch. And the ending of that movie is just like so, so sad. It's a huge tearjerker. So yeah, I guess those would be the first two off the top of my head. But like, I don't think my brain likes filing away difficult deaths to watch. Our next question, Brad, is from your wife. She actually sent me a direct message on Instagram and asked, if you could be the main character in any movie, what would it be?
Man, that is a good question, Haley. So shout out to my wife for being amazing.
Yeah.
This is a tough question. I mean, you could go a lot of different ways with it. Like, I don't know, maybe I want to be Superman, you know? We could be Henry Cavill in Superman. I really think that playing Ethan Hunt or being Ethan Hunt would be fascinating.
Mm.
Like I know that might be cliche to be the big bad spy. Like, I wouldn't want to be James Bond. I think that James Bond overall is kind of a boring character.
Yeah, and kind of like, sleazy.
Yeah, he's a little bit sleazy. But like Ethan Hunt just embodies awesomeness. Like everything he does is awe-inspiring. So I think Ethan Hunt might actually be up there. I just love the Mission Impossible franchise.
Absolutely. I will say for myself that like if I know myself well enough to say I'm not going to be the guy that wants to be a character that's getting constantly chased and shot at. Like, that just doesn't sound like a fun life to me. So you know what I would go with? Like, if we're going lighthearted, I think I would want to be Gene Kelly's character Don Lockwood from Singin' in the Rain, because you're a movie star, you've got a nice house, you know, you get Debbie Reynolds at the end of the movie, and you can sing and you can tap dance with the best of them. And like, honestly, if there was anything I could do better in my life that I would like to learn how to do, it would be like play some instruments, be a better singer, and tap dance. That just sounds awesome.
Bob, so, first off, you're a spectacular singer.
But I'm not Gene Kelly, is what I'm saying. Like, the dude has a great voice.
That is true.
So yeah, that would be my choice. I just want to tap dance and star in a bunch of movies.
That is the most Bob answer. I want to be in old Hollywood.
That sounds awesome. You go get shot at by a bunch of, you know, Russian intelligence.
Yeah, and that world that you live in is only possible because I have saved it.
That's true. That's true. Brad, as we segue into our next question, we got to get into the rest of these whiskeys. I have pulled off of the shelf experiment number 7 from Still 630. This is their Mesquite Smoke Finish. It's 100 proof as well. I'm excited to try this one because we recently received a bottle in the mail from Wild Turkey of their Long Branch, which we're going to be featuring on an upcoming episode. And that one has mesquite as well, but I think it's only like 86 proof or something, might even be 80 proof. So this is kind of like a 100 proof version of Long Branch. And I'm kind of excited to see what this tastes like.
I will say I have had Long Branch and it is delicious. I really, really love Long Branch. So yeah, let's... give this one a nose. I'm not going to lie. They all smell young to me.
They smell exactly the same. They smell like whiskey that's been aged for less than 2 years. And Brad, I will say this. This one is not my favorite. The finish is, it has a distinct note of ashtray.
Huh.
And I'm not feeling that.
This one is tasting peaty again for me. It's got a little bit of dragon fire.
It does have a little bit of that peaty smoke, but it tastes more like burnt ash than like it tips too far into the smokiness to the point where it really does taste like overcharred wood.
Oh, man, I actually think that this one has a decent amount of like tobacco ash flavor to it.
Yeah, like an ashtray.
I'm kind of digging the tobacco flavor.
All right.
I don't think it's as ashy as your. Well, for me,
what we've learned today is that Brad enjoys eating cigarettes.
I do, man. I've never smoked a cigarette, but I can't tell you how many I've eaten.
So Brad, your wife sent in that last question, and I just wrote a question because I want to give a shout out to our wonderful wives. Brad, how did you meet your wife? The 30-second version.
The 30-second version. I was at Malone. I always helped the freshmen move in because it meant that I got to move in really early. And I was introduced to Haley by a friend of mine who was from Haley's hometown. And a week later, Haley was going off to class. And sure enough, she sees me and like bebops on up and is like all cute. And she goes, "Hey, Todd." And I just distinctly remember going, and like, I'm not always great with names. So I was like really proud in the moment that I remembered her name. And I was like, "Hey, Haley, my name's not Todd. It's Brad."
"Oh, your name's Todd."
And she goes, "Oh, sorry." And like scurries away like a little mouse that just got like scared.
Oh, man.
And like hoped never to see me again.
Brad, from now on, the segment's going to be called Todd Explains.
Like, Todd Explains.
I can't wait. You know, I sound like such a square when I say this, but I met my wife at church, actually. It was like at a Bible study. I was really good friends with her younger sister, who is now, incidentally, my sister-in-law. She married my best friend, and I met Carrie. She's 5 years older than me, so I think I was a senior in high school, and she had just graduated, and she came home to visit. And we kind of sat next to each other, like in this circle in the church basement. And I had to really work hard to convince her that she should date me because I was like a baby to her. But it worked out pretty well. Well, Brad, our next question is, again, from our friend Bourbon and Stuff, who's asking, what has been your favorite quarantine pastime? Is there anything that you've been doing, you know, or were doing before stuff kind of went back to normal a bit to pass the time during quarantine?
Oh, man. Honestly, dude, I just like played video games, did my online work, went on runs. That was about it, man.
You know what? Like, I got so sick of being locked away in like our spare bedroom because we had to like convert it into a home office. It's not supposed to be like we have a patio table up here that I work off of. That I was just like, I need to get outside. I need to do something in nature. And we are very blessed in Northeast Ohio. We have a national park. We have tons of state parks. And then in Summit County, we have these metro parks that are basically like just subsidiaries of the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. And they have some great trails. And so I took my 3-year-old with me. And all summer, we just hiked trails. And I think we've done like 43 trails now over this, like different trails over the summer.
Dude.
It has been just a blast. And I just, you know, I'm not a big runner. You know, Brad ran track. I've never been a huge runner, but I will walk and hike up hills all day if I have to. And so that's
what about downhills?
Downhills, I just roll.
Like a dwarf from The Hobbit.
I just tuck and roll, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, Bob, I'm not going to lie. One of the things that I miss most from living in Northeast Ohio is the Metro Park system. Mm. I mean, big, big shout out. They have some of the best hiking trails. There's some good parks down here in Delaware. Delaware State Park is amazing. There's a beautiful lake, all sorts of stuff to do. But the Metro Parks, man, I miss them.
All right, Brad. Well, what do you say we keep going with these still 630 samples? I just pulled down experiment number 8, which you wrote chocolate RP. What does that mean? Chocolate what?
Role playing. It's pretending to be chocolate. Honestly, Bob, I am not sure. David was great. He gave me samples of some of their main lineup, which was spectacular. And then he was like, "All right, man, you could take any 2 boxes of our experiments." And I was like, "I'll take this one and that one." And he's like, "All right, man, here you go." And so I didn't get the full explanation on all of the different experiments.
I'm trying to figure out what this means. Chocolate rye something? Rye peat? I don't know. We're going to find out.
Rye potential.
Rye potato. All right. Yeah. So what are you picking up, Brad, on the taste of this one?
As this one sits on my palate, it actually has a little bit of a fruity flavor. I'm surprised. The other 2 from this series.
Oh, this is good.
I forgot to mention this. The reason these are numbered is that they came out with a batch every quarter. So this was like their 7th month of experimentation, their 8th, and their 9th.
Okay.
And they would release the 3 as a batch in, you know, I don't know, quarter 2 of 2018 or 19.
Gotcha.
Whenever they did it. So that's why they're numbered this way. So we have their 7th, 8th, and 9th month. and 25th, 26th, and 27th month. This one, I'm surprised. It doesn't have any peat on it or smokiness. It's a little bit fruity. It kind of reminds me of Rebel Yell a little bit. It's like a cherry cola flavor.
Dude, I think that your palate is zapped from all these whiskeys we've been drinking. I don't get any of that. I get like really great dark cocoa like nubs. This is super dark, almost coffee. Like it reminds me of a coffee stout. It has that great sort of you know, black coffee bitterness to it, but it's definitely a dark cocoa that I'm getting on this. And it is really working well with the young grains. It's like surprisingly well. I think this might be my favorite of the whole lineup so far, Brad. This is really, really good.
Huh. Yeah. As I'm letting it sit on my palate, I think that the finish, I'm getting a little bit of that bitterness that you're talking about. And it is really nice, but I'm still getting a little bit of fruitiness up front.
Interesting.
But we have drank like five or six whiskeys by now.
Six whiskeys.
Yeah, who's to say? Who's to say?
All right, Brad. Well, our next question comes from an Instagram follower called BBA Today. And we've shared a couple messages back and forth. They're actually just starting up their own podcast. And the question they wrote into us was, how do you build a successful podcast or grow your audience while also staying true to your ideas?
I'm going to quote the great Shia LaBeouf here. Just do it, man. Like you just got to go out there and get it. Go watch that video over and over again and then record your podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I think podcasts are one of those great areas now that technology, obviously it wouldn't exist without technology, but because everyone can find their niche, like what seems niche actually has a really big audience. And so I don't think you really ever need to like quote unquote sell out to get big in the podcasting world. I don't know anybody that listens to podcasts that are just like really watered down. You know what I mean? Like we give our unfiltered opinions on films on this podcast and on whiskeys. And like, I don't think there's any other way for our podcast to succeed unless we are honest about what we think about these things. Because if all we did was, you know, heap praise on every whiskey we ever tried, then there'd be no way to distinguish like a good one from a bad one or a better one from a lesser one. So I honestly think that like once you find your groove, your niche, like whatever your podcast topic is, you have to commit to being as honest as possible with it. And that's the only way that you really can grow.
Well, and that's the thing. In a world where the entire globe is as interconnected as it is, people online value authenticity. Like, I didn't think that E.T. was a good movie. I didn't think Eternal Sunshine was a good movie. And I'm okay with that.
That was a really great segue, though, Brad.
A segue to what?
Well, our next question comes from our friend, the Urban Bourbonist.
Oh, Chris.
And I don't mean to cut you off midstream there, but this is a perfect segue because Chris's question was, can Brad please explain again why he hates E.T.?
Okay. E.T. is a bad movie. It is barely...
No, wait a minute. You gave it a 6. Like, it can't be bad and be above average at the same time.
I would say 7 is my... Like, if I give something less than a 7, I would say it's like, close to being bad.
Interesting.
7 is like... 7 is like my...
Wouldn't you think that like 5 7, would be the midpoint, though? We rate on a 1 to 10 scale.
Haley and I have this argument all the time. In her mind, 5 is like dead center. Like that is an average movie. For some reason, when a movie hits 7, that's when I would call it a good movie. If it's under 7, it's not good.
So should we just be subtracting 2 points from all of your scores now that we know that 7 is your midpoint?
It's not my midpoint. It's the point in which I would say a movie is good.
All right, Brad.
Well, I mean, think about it this way. Like, we grew up in a system where anything under a 70% is, like, a failing grade.
I get that. Like, I get that.
So, like, I've just always kind of held on to that and been like, yeah, if I give a movie a 6.5, like, it's not terrible. I might not call it a bad movie, but I wouldn't call it a good movie.
Okay.
So, here's the thing. Bob, you're just trying to distract me from talking about how bad E.T. is. None of the special effects have held up well at all. E.T. is terrifying. The story doesn't really make a ton of sense. I don't think that Spielberg does a great job of explaining things to us. I think that there's scenes that just don't make sense. And I won't like belabor the point, but like really though, like the scene where he gets drunk because E.T. is drinking, like why? And I know that that's just one scene. Like, I'm not trashing the movie over one scene. But that scene is in the movie. And there's other parts of the film where I'm just kind of like, I don't really get what's going on. I don't know what the message of E.T. is. Like, they show up at the start and they're just a bunch of peaceful, like, hippie aliens that are, like, healing the planet, I guess. And then there's, like, bad adults that are chasing you. I'm like, way over the 80s all adults are bad anthem. So I just, there's not much in E.T. that really works well for me.
All right, Brad. Well, let's continue to round out our trip through Still 630's samples with this experiment number 26, which is a 27.5-month aged 100-proof whiskey. This is the most aged one we've had so far, and it barely meets the criteria for straight whiskey. But it definitely doesn't smell as young. The notes are a little more well-rounded. This has some really great pear notes on the top of it. It smells soft, I guess is the word that I would use. It's bright and it's soft.
It might be because of how young all the other ones smelled. This one smells spectacular.
And it tastes pretty similar. This is almost like a young Irish whiskey to me. Like, it's got some really good smoke on it and definitely some maltiness. But the top note on it is like green apple and pear and really, really bright fruity notes.
Yeah, I think pear is a great, great note. That's predominantly what I'm getting. I'm not going to lie, though, Bob. I'm not actually a big fan of this. Hey. I think it might have hit my palate the wrong way, but it's got some weird stuff going on. It's a little bit tangy to me. I don't know, man. This one's not jiving with me the same way that a few of the other ones were.
Well, when you have six to sample from, I'm sure that there's going to be some that hit and some that don't. So we still have one more to try. And just a couple more questions here, Brad. The first one is from our friend on Instagram, At Least It's Raining. And she asks, how do you choose which films to feature on the podcast? And
Bob is a tyrant.
I was going to say, I'm a dictator.
Them all.
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole
I've asked to have Charade on here like 97 times, and here we are in season 3 with no Cary Grant.
You know what? Honestly, I keep forgetting to like put it into.
Also, let's be honest, man. How have we not had Cary Grant? Or I don't think we've had Audrey Hepburn on the podcast.
We have not.
Yet.
We are going to get to North by Northwest at the end of this season. So North by Northwest is coming up quickly. Brad, I promise I will get Charade worked into the next couple seasons here. So the whole premise of our podcast was, you know, I've seen a ton of movies. Brad has not, although you had seen quite a few movies. And so it was like, you know, let me, as a movie nerd, walk one of my best friends through classic movies as we both explore the world of whiskey together. And so where it started was I had this list of like, I don't know, 150-ish movies that I was like, I think everyone should see these films. We randomized them into, you know, a completely random order and made a couple seasons out of it. And as we've gone on, we've included more movies. You know, we've had these mini series that we've done. So it really has just been kind of like trying to find patterns in these randomized movies, but then also like, hey, you know, maybe we should do Green Book because it won Best Picture. And I, you know, not my favorite movie, but it's worth talking about. So we kind of just like, we go back and forth, we dialogue a lot about upcoming movies and what else should be in there. And other than that, it's just that I'm a dictator.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, like we talked about like when Endgame was coming out, we were like, oh, we should probably do a Marvel movie. So we did Iron Man, you know, the start of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I'm just excited to have watched all these movies. I think this season has been my best season for, you know, having movies that I've seen before. The first two seasons, I hadn't seen a lot of those films.
Yeah, yeah. And Brad, like, I'm excited moving forward for some of these revisits because I kind of wish I had some of those movies back from season one where it's like, oh, man, maybe we shouldn't have started with Casablanca or with Treasure of the Sierra Madre. And, you know, the more and more movies we watch together and we get kind of that nice foundation and basis for appreciating and reviewing movies, I kind of want to go back and revisit some more of those. So, Brad, speaking of movies that you had never seen, the last question we got from our friend Aperture Flash is, what movie were you most shocked to learn that the other had not seen?
I feel like we've only had one or two movies on the podcast that you haven't seen before.
Yeah,
I
think that's like the downfall of it is I hand-selected most of these movies. So, you know, the one that The first one I can think of that I had not seen before was When Harry Met Sally. And I remember you being pretty shocked that I had never watched it before.
Yeah, and the thing was, I hadn't seen that, but it was one of those movies where, like, everybody's heard of When Harry Met Sally. So I was like, wait a second, Bob, you haven't seen that? Actually, have you seen Charade?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, there you go. I am shocked that you haven't seen Charade.
I know.
It is a spectacular romp of a film. I'm very disappointed in you, not just as, like, a cinephile, but as a human being.
And, you know, for me, I can't really think of one off the top of my head because there's been a couple times where I'm like, oh, Brad, I specifically put this in here because I thought you would have seen it. And, like, you know, it's happened so many times now that I'm just like, I go into it expecting that you never saw the movie.
Well, I appreciate your vote of confidence. We're going to go into our last whiskey from Still 630. And I will say, this has been fun. These experimental batches are fascinating. And I think that David is building up for himself just this broad foundation of knowledge as to what can be unique about whiskey and how he can improve his main lineup of whiskeys, which, by the way, were really, really good. We've been talking about his experimental stuff. Go check out Still 630's main lineup. Bob, they also make some other stuff. They make gin. I think they have a vodka. So they have all sorts of things for you to check out. But right now we are drinking X25. It is aged for 17 and a half months. It is also 100 proof. I think every single one of these was 100 proof.
I think so too. Yeah, and Brad, I don't really have any more than what you just said on my sample. It does just kind of taste like a standard whiskey that I guess maybe the experiment was just with the aging of it. It tastes very young. It doesn't really taste distinguishing in any other way from any of the other ones that we've had so far.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I had to pick one, I think that the X7 might have been my favorite, or the X9. The two that were nice and smoky and peaty, I thought were just incredible.
Yeah, the two that I set aside were that chocolate RP, whatever RP stood for, and the X27, which I think may have been the first one that we tried. It really hit my palate nicely. It had some great, it had some good, really bright green apple notes on the front of it.
Well, as we're sipping on this one, Bob, I'm going to ask you a question I've probably asked you before, but it's one of my favorite icebreaker questions. If you could have the singing voice of one human being in the world, whose singing voice would you take?
I know why you're asking this, because I'm actually editing this episode right now, Brad. If I could have anyone's voice, you know who I've always really loved is Nat King Cole. Like, of all the crooners, he didn't have the most powerful voice. He never could belt the way that, like, Frank Sinatra did. But even if you watch, if you ever see a video of him singing, he has these nice, warm, open vowels. And, like, when he sings an O sound, like, his mouth just forms this perfect O shape. I just love listening to the warmth of his voice. And, like, you know, if I could choose between, like, having that really great, like, timbre to my voice or the powerful, like, beltiness, I think I would choose the Nat King Cole side of things every time.
Yeah, dude, I think that's a great pick. Nat King Cole, whew, his voice, it's just so, so amazing. I think for me, I always have a few different voices that I kind of go back and forth on. I really do love Paul McCartney's voice. I just think he has a spectacular range. I think that the way he enunciates words and the way his accent comes through sometimes is amazing. So I really love Paul. I think a close second would be Frank. I think Sinatra just has one of the coolest voices. Like, it's just unique enough that he's just, I just love Frank. But in the end, I think the man with some of the greatest range and beltiness that we've ever heard is Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Well, and if I could have Freddie's voice.
And he just had such a control, too. Like, his vibrato is incredible. You know, like, there's just some people that not only have the power, you know, and the range, but there's so much control behind it as well.
Yeah, the dude could just kill it on stage. So, yeah, I think that would probably be it for me, Freddie.
Well, Brad, I have one last question for you, and it's one that I did not include in our Google Doc for a reason, because I wanted to get your most spontaneous response, and that is this. What are you most looking forward to about becoming a dad?
Oh, man.
So for those who don't know, Brad's wife is pregnant. They're due in early December. I am freaking pumped. You know, I just had a baby back in February as my second child. This is Brad's first. And like, I just have to know, man, what makes you smile when you think about, you know, the thought of becoming a dad?
Man, Bob, that is just such a good question. I am so excited for so many of the little things. Like, I'm excited to just hold my child. I think probably my answer would be I'm excited to read them books. Like, I just, from a very young age, had been reading myself. My parents read to me. It's just, it's so much access to so many different worlds and knowledge. And I think that reading books gives you intuition into the world and people's psyche. And I just, yeah, I, maybe that's probably my answer. I can't wait to read to my children. And not just when they're like little, but when they're 2, when they're 4, when they're 8, when they're 12. Like, I can't wait to read books with my kids.
Yeah.
That's something I'm really, really pumped for.
Absolutely, man. That's such a great answer. And like, you know, I'm such a nerd about stuff like this, but like, even as we start to go through some of these movies together, Brad, I'm like, man, I can't wait until I can start to introduce my kid to, you know, and just like
watching it with Brad is great, but
like being able to watch my son's reaction to things when I show him clips from a movie,
man.
Or like, you know, we watched Singing in the Rain when he was really little, like a year and a half, and he was just like enthralled by the dancing and the colors. And you know, every now and then, even now, he'll be like, can we watch Gene Kelly? And we'll just turn on like a YouTube clip of that's it's just so, so cool watching these young minds like absorb things and learn. And last night, like, we were playing basketball in the living room with his little tykes hoop, and we were learning how to shoot a hook shot. And like, he's shooting hook shots over me. Like, it was just, it's just such, I don't know, man. Like, it's the first time he's ever watched somebody shoot a hook shot. And he's like, I want to go try it now. And he's doing it with me. Like, it's just so, so cool. Brad, I'm so pumped for you and Haley. You know, we have some big momentous occasions coming up in our life soon. You and I both turned 30 in November. You're having a baby in December. 2020 has been the absolute worst. And yet, like, we're coming out of 2020, you and I, with two of the best gifts that we could have ever asked for. And so, like, you know, all in all, I think everything's going to work out okay for us.
Yeah, I would say that it has. I just can't say how blessed I am.
Well, Brad, I have so enjoyed doing this with you today. Like, it's been so long since we got to talk to each other about non-movie, non-podcast stuff and just kind of sit down and shoot the breeze. COVID has taken a lot from us. I miss being able to see you in person, man. I miss being able to share a glass with you and just kind of, you know, talk about life. And so this has been wonderful. We want to say thank you to Still 630 and to St. Louis Distillery for all of these wonderful samples that we've gotten. We will be back on Monday with another regularly scheduled episode. But until then, I'm Bob Book.
I'm Brad G.
And we'll see you next time.